In April, I built a fence in my backyard. And the deal is that I had to go get a permit. You know, this is Virginia Beach. I actually had to get a permit to get the permit. I mean, that sounds crazy, doesn't it? But I got a permit, and then I had to get a permit for my permit. And then I had Miss Utility come and, you know, check out and make sure I wasn't, you know, digging up the I don't know what I was digging up, but anyway, I was supposed to not be digging it up. And so I bought an auger. And, you know, an auger is a machine actually with a bit on the end of it. And what happened was is that I started off real well. I mean, I started digging them, you know, they're really pretty nice to use instead of using a post hole digger. And so I was doing it, and there's only one problem that I have. I have trees, and trees have roots under the ground. And when you have roots under the ground, the auger doesn't really like to, it doesn't really like roots. And what happens is that when you hit a root, the auger stops, I mean, the bit keeps turning, or quits turning, but the top doesn't. And if you're holding onto the top, you're going to do a ride. You're going to go round and round. Okay, so what would happen is that I would go down with the thing, and you go down and go, and it would just, and I mean, and rather than just spin around, you know, of course I'd let go of it. And the thing about it is that I said, what am I going to do? And so I'd have to pull the auger out of the ground, and then I thought I had all the tools that I needed, but obviously I didn't. I tried to get a chainsaw to start cutting those roots down in the ground, but you can't use a chainsaw for that because you can't get the chainsaw down into the ground. You know, it's just the way it is. And Ryan Anderson came over and said, you're going to need my Sawzall. And, you know, I didn't even know that I needed one of those to put in a fence. And, you know, he was absolutely right, because I could take that Sawzall, I could go into that hole, and I could cut those roots as I was going around, and I could dig further. And then I had to quit using the auger. If you see, because if you use the auger, what you're going to keep having the same problem. And I didn't really like doing that breakdance spinning thing on top of the auger. So I decided that, you know, I'm going to have to, I need to use a regular old post hole digger. So I got I borrowed Will Crane's post hole digger, and I started, you know, using the post hole digger and digging down, get so far, use that Sawzall, cut that root out, and then keep on going until I got my fence done. It is amazing what happens when you have the right tools. You realize what I'm saying to you? If you are using the wrong tool, like the chainsaw, you don't get anywhere. In fact, you might get somewhere, but it takes you forever to get there. And I needed that Sawzall. It's sort of like, you know, I'm telling you this from experience. I've used or tried to use a knife for a screwdriver before. You know what it does? It breaks the blade. I've tried to use a screwdriver for a chisel. You know what it does? I break the handle. You see, I'm using it for the wrong reason, because it's the tool, it's not made that way. Well, understand this, the church is a spiritual organization. And what has happened here is that we need to act in a spiritual way in order to accomplish spiritual things that happen in the church. Now, we operate by faith, and I know that a lot of people want to say to me, you know, what we do is we operate by the gifts of our members. And the truth is that I still say we operate by faith. I believe that we operate by the faith that God puts in our members. That's really where I am on this. I believe that God moves in the hearts of people, and that's why I thank God when things come in. I mean, I just thank God because He's the one who worked in the hearts of those individuals. So this is what's going on. But here's the deal. God has gifted the church with members who are spiritually gifted to do the work that He urges them to do. That is how our church actually operates. It operates through these people and having spiritual gifts. See, knowing and acting on these spiritual gifts will actually bring us fulfillment. And what happens is when we don't act on our spiritual gifts, we'll find that our bucket is going to always stay empty. Acting in an area that you do not have a spiritual gift, in other words, I don't have a spiritual gift of doing this, but I'm going to try to act like it, will take a whole lot of energy for one thing, and it will also cause you some frustration. That's what happens to people when they do this. So we need a greater understanding of the spiritual gifts. Now, I'm not going to give you the whole thing about spiritual gifts today. We'd be here till tonight, in fact, if I did that. I'm going to read you the three areas of gifts. I mean, three sections of the Bible that they talk about spiritual gifts. And I'm going to give you a very, very short explanation. I'm going to give you something that I think that can really help you with the understanding of not only having a spiritual gift, but using your spiritual gift. I want you to be fulfilled. I want there to be joy in your life. I don't want you to be, you know, empty, your bucket to be empty all the time. So let's start off with this. There are three listings of spiritual gifts in the Bible. There are three listings. I'll read the first one to you. That's where we were coming to today anyway. Romans chapter 12, verse 6. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. The one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. Now, there are seven gifts that are listed in this chapter 12 of Romans. There are seven. Let me go over them really, really quickly. Now, I want to show you something here. In the Greek... they put the most important one first. I want you to notice when I talk about the other spiritual gifts and look where these things are and realize we're not talking about the same thing in another list. Just letting you know that. Okay, first one that we had there was prophecy. Now, this prophecy, I believe this in my heart of hearts, this prophecy is not telling you this is what's going to happen next year. This is not what's going to happen tomorrow even or in 5 minutes. This is the prophecy that says you get a word from God and you share that word from God to the people. Often, this type of prophecy is one that is pointing out sinfulness either in a person or even in a church's life. And prophets are not well liked. Just being very honest with you. I mean, you can read the Old Testament if you don't believe me on that. But prophets are not well liked. But the first one is prophecy. Second one is service. Remember, we're putting this in order. Service is, you know what it is. It's actually like when we had our mega Sundays, when we're having our breakfast and all of that kind of stuff. There were people that were serving in that. Now, if you have the gift of service, that was a joy to you. If you do not have the gift of service, that was a burden. I'm just telling you the way that it works. Now, it was a joy to you because you got to use your spiritual gift and you were working with God, bringing life and joy into people's lives. That's what it really amounts to. And so if that's your spiritual gift, then you enjoy it. Third one is listed is teaching. Teaching comes with it the desire to study. This word teaching doesn't mean that you just stand up in front of people and you talk. This is a desire to study first. You deeply go into the Word of God and you study it. And here's the thing about a teacher. A teacher teaches in order to study. Understand that, what's going on there. The study, they love to study, so the teaching drives them to study. And they give you depth in their teaching. Exhortation, that's encouragement. Sometimes, folks, people are doing everything they can to get to church. And when they've been gone for like 2 months or 3 months, they don't need somebody saying, "Where were you? You should have been at church." You know what they really need? Somebody encouraging them. And that's the thing that happens so often with people, that they don't get that encouragement. So this is a gift of God. Then giving, of course, is, and it comes with another thing. It comes, you know, not just with the generosity that is there. Typically, God gives people the gift of giving with the ability to make it as well. You make it and you give it. And God lets them be very generous. Leadership, it is, and obviously in leading, and it says it with zeal. In fact, that the one that's doesn't mean somebody else can't be a leader, but it does mean when you have the gift of leadership, you do it with gusto. You really enjoy doing this and leading. Not because you want to get yourself put up high, but because you really can see how you can organize things and make things work. And then the last one is mercy. Mercy, it says, to do this with cheerfulness. And in fact is, if you have the gift of mercy, you will do this with cheerfulness. If you don't have the gift of mercy, you'll do it with not cheerfulness. I can tell you that if you're, you know, because if you have the gift of mercy, you could work in our food pantry, for example, and you'll do it with cheerfulness. If you don't have the gift of mercy, you're going, "How can that person need this food? Look at them, what they're driving up here in right now." That's what happens with people. That's because this is what goes on. Okay, so this is that first gift. Now, I believe that these gifts here, these seven gifts that are mentioned, are permanent gifts. You get them at salvation, and they're yours. You can call on them, you can use them, you're using them for God's glory, you're going to walk with God when you're using them. And that's the only way you can really use them is when you're walking with God. And so these are the gifts that are there. Now let's go into the more spectacular gifts. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 8. It says, for to one is given the Spirit, the utterance of wisdom, and to another the utterance of knowledge, and according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the same one Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy. Now wait a minute, wasn't prophecy number one in that last list? I'm going to tell you, it's down here at number six here. So what does that mean? It's not the same prophecy is what it is. It's not the same prophecy. I'll talk about that in a second here. And it says, to another, the ability to distinguish between spirits, to another, various kinds of tongues, to another, the interpretation of tongues. All these are empowered by one and the same Spirit who apportions to each one individually as he wills. So there are nine gifts mentioned in 1 Corinthians 12, 8 through 11. And here they are. I'm giving them to you. One, word of wisdom. Now, the word of wisdom is that you know what to do. What happens is that there may be a decision that needs to be made, either your decision or a decision that needs to be done in the church, and you get a word of wisdom, and you say, well, how can you know that's the right thing to do? You know that's the right thing to do because a word of wisdom has come to you. The next one is the word of knowledge. Now, that's knowing something that you couldn't possibly have known. In other words, God just simply reveals it to you. Sometimes he reveals it to you in your spirit, and you just know it, and you can't really explain it. You don't have really any evidence of it, but this is the word of knowledge. Next one is faith. Faith is believing on God's word for something that everybody else tells you it's impossible. Everybody says that's impossible, and you believe it anyway because God has revealed it to you. Then healing, obviously, what that is that people are sick. You either pray over them, put your hands on them, whatever you do, and you heal them. You see that they're healed. And then miracles. Miracles can be all kinds of things, so I don't even know how to really define them. Just saying that it's not natural, that's all I'd have to say. It's not something natural. And then prophecy here. Now, this prophecy here, I believe, is that word where you get, I believe, because God has revealed it to me, this prophecy, that this is going to happen in a week, or this is going to happen 2 years from now, or this is going to happen, you know, whatever. This is the evidence of the things, and this is what I believe is going to happen, and that's prophecy. Distinguishing of spirits, that's where you can realize that maybe there's somebody that you know. For example, I think a lot of people don't ever have this because they don't know. Sometimes I look at some of these preachers on TV, and I don't think you even have to have the distinguishing of spirit, and you can realize this guy's not right. And you can go, or the other side of it is, this guy is right. And so that's a distinguishing of spirits. And then tongues, that's ecstatic utterance. I don't believe this is languages. I believe this is ecstatic utterance that people are saying. And then the interpretation of tongues, which is obviously, you hear somebody speaking in tongues and you know what that person is actually trying to say. Now, these gifts are manifestly supernatural. They are not something that you can say, hey, you know what, I can explain this away, but when you get to this, they are supernatural. I do not believe, and I'll give you the reason why, that they can be called upon at any time. And see, I've looked at it very carefully, and I think there's a lot of people out there, and they say, I've got the gift of healing. And I look at those people, and I never see them go to the hospital. You know, they have rallies, but they never go to the hospital. You see, if I had the gift of healing, I'd go out there and I'd empty one hospital after another. You know, I'd start in ICU and I'd start just emptying the hospital. You know, they'd have plenty of hospital beds. I mean, if that was my gift, if I really had a gift like that. But what happens so often with these people is that when the person isn't healed, they got the gift of healing, you know, what they do is they explain it away, whether you didn't have enough faith or whatever happened. Maybe the moon didn't turn the right direction or whatever. I don't know what it is, but they'll explain the reason why you didn't get it rather than just honestly being able to admit they couldn't heal you. That's really what happened. So, there are a group of people out there, though, that are called cessationists. I didn't say sensationalist. I said cessationalist. Cessation comes with the word cease. They believe that when the last apostle died, when John died, all of these gifts that are mentioned here also went away at the same time. They believe that this is what happened at the very beginning and the church, and the church needed it at that time, but now those things have all passed away and they're no longer around. I've heard a lot of Baptists preach this. I've heard other non-denominational people preach this. I want you to hear from me right now. I'm not one of these people. Now, this is your point if you want to run out of the room. Because I believe, here's what I believe. I believe that all of these gifts are just as viable, as active, and as real as they were in the book of Acts. And you go through the book of Acts, you'll see these things come up again and again. And so, but I also believe that anyone who is open to the Spirit of God, and God has that gift for a specific purpose for that person at that time, can receive any of these gifts. I want you to hear that. But I don't believe these are abiding gifts. I don't believe you have them all the time. In other words, you may heal somebody one time. You put your hands on them, maybe you prayed for them, whatever, and they got healed. And you go, well, you know what? I saw that healing. I got the gift of healing. And the answer is, yes, you did. But that may never, ever happen to you again. In other words, it's for as the Spirit wills. That's what the scripture says there. As the Spirit wills. And that word that's translated, he wills, is in the present tense. And present tense means that it's ongoing. It means that to me, at least, and what I understand is, and I'm really at peace with this, by the way, folks. I'm really at peace. I really believe that I got it right. But, you know, who knows on that? But you'd have to listen to the Spirit yourself. But the deal is that when that person gets that gift and the Spirit is working continually, it may give it to you again. It's not something that the Spirit says, I'm going to give it to you. I can leave you alone because you still got it from now on. But what happens there is the Spirit will give it to you and you will use it for a specific purpose at a specific time. Now, I will tell you this. Only believers can receive a spiritual gift. And the reason is that you need a live spirit, and your spirit is dead. Dead meaning that you could not respond to God before you became a believer. When you became a believer, your spirit was made alive. You could hear the Spirit of God. And that what happens is the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, then works within you and gives you your spiritual gift. And at times gives you maybe another gift that you will use for that one moment or for more than one moment. See, you know, but as I said, these gifts don't abide with the Christian all the time. This is the way I look at it. Let's say there's a guy that's a wide receiver on a football team. So they throw him the ball, okay? He makes good yards and he runs with the ball. Wonderful thing, isn't it? He makes good yards and runs with the ball. Well, here's what happens. He plays every play, but they don't throw him the ball every play. He's in the game all the way through, but he doesn't get the ball every time. Well, that's the same thing that I look at these more spectacular gifts with. But what happens is that God can say to you, I'm giving you this gift now. You're going to do it one time, and that's going to be the end of it. Or maybe five times, or maybe 500 times. I have no idea how many times the Spirit is going to do it, but the Spirit works in you. And part of this reason, I've worked on this for a long time, because first I wanted to be like the cessationists. I want to get rid of these gifts so I don't have to fool with them anymore. And then I got to the point where I started to see they were working in my life. And what was I going to do about that then? Am I going to deny something that I've experienced? And let me give you just a couple of examples. This is the other time you can run out of the room because you think this guy's crazy. But once I prayed over a lady, had a stroke, and when I left that hospital room, she was completely healed. I mean, absolutely no evidence she had a stroke. Now, I didn't know it when I walked out of the room because it happened, suddenly. But her sister comes to me. Now, here's the crazy part about that. The sister comes to me and says, my sister, the one that had the stroke, was healed. She was only like 37, 38 years of age. She wasn't that old. And said, my sister was completely healed when you came. She was, and the doctors were amazed. Everybody was amazed. And, I said, well, that's wonderful. That's just absolutely wonderful. And then she said, here's a list of things I want you to pray for. I gave her the list back and said, no, that's not it. That's not it. So I've seen this happen. I acted on what God had told me to do one time. And let me tell you what happened was that this was one of those things that, you know, I knew that God wanted me to do this. And other Christian pastors laughed at me when I told them. Understand that. They laughed at me. That will never happen. And I went through with it, and God did even more than what I could have imagined. Even more than I told them that was going on. So that happened there. That was the deal with faith. And then one time I told somebody, I got a word from God. It was as clear as a bell. As time went by, I told this guy, I said, this is going to happen. And this guy told me, he said, that is absolutely not going to happen. You are absolutely wrong. I said, I know I am right. I know I am right. And what happened was, 6 months later, the thing that I said was going to happen, it happened. That guy called me up. I remember he said, you are a prophet. No, God gave me that gift one time. One time. I don't go out and buy lottery tickets. I would if I was a prophet like people think a prophet was, because it wouldn't be gambling anymore. It would be cheating, but it wouldn't be gambling anymore. So here's the thing. These were gifts that were given for a single purpose, as the Spirit will. They could happen again, yes. But I can tell you I have no control over any of these things. And so it could happen. But if it does happen, it would happen as the Spirit wills. Here's the thing, folks. That could happen not because I'm a preacher, but that could happen to everybody who's a believer, who believes that God could work in their heart, will not resist the Spirit, will not quench the Spirit, rather, and they could see that God would work in their hearts. Now, the problem with these gifts are that they are dangerous gifts. You see, what can happen to you is you'll see this happen one time. So you'll start claiming that it's going to happen all the time. And when it doesn't happen all the time, you'll start trying to manufacture it all the time. And that's counterfeiting a gift from God. That is not walking with God. That's walking against God. So these are very dangerous gifts, I believe. And I believe skepticism is the best attitude toward these things. What I'm trying to say is that you see somebody that claims this sort of thing, I saw somebody healed, blah, blah, blah. I would say, use skepticism. Doubt it up front. I don't have a problem with that, the doubting it up front. Doubt it up front. And check it out to see if the Spirit of God is in it. Is this person taking credit for themselves? Is this person saying that They're something special should happen to them because they've done this sort of thing? Or are they just as awed as they should be? Let me tell you, nobody was more surprised that that lady got healed when I prayed for her than I was. Let's just be honest with you. It's not like I went in there and said, I have all the faith in the world. That is not what happened. What happened was God did a miracle. And I just was there to watch what God would do. Now, I will say this to you. Are there any other theologians who agree with me on this? First, I need to let you know I'm not a theologian. You know, I do study the Bible, but I'm not a theologian. And the second one is, I don't know of anybody else. It doesn't mean they don't exist. I just don't know of anybody else. And that should throw up some red flags and antennas and everything else. I recognize that fully. So this is your third chance to run out of the room. So I go into the next set of gifts. Ephesians chapter 4:11, it says, and he gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and the teachers. Now, you've got a list. Now, there are five gifts that are listed in Ephesians 4. Okay, recognize there's five gifts that are there. First one is apostles. Now, if you are saying that apostles are the guys that saw Jesus face to face and they wrote the New Testament, then that group has passed away. Letting you know that. Okay, if that's what you want to call them. That also, and this is just my own interpretation, and I don't really preach this a lot because I don't think that it's necessary, but the word apostello, which the apostles come from, means I send. And I've always wondered if that means missionary. I don't know that that's true or not. I'm just letting you know that it's there. But and then the second one is prophets. And a prophet, understand, a prophet is somebody who God generally is gifted into the church to tell people of their sinfulness and the way they're going wrong. That's what a prophet is. And then an evangelist, they share the gospel. Shepherds, that's people that have pastoral care over the over people. And teachers. Now, these are gifts to the church in the form of people. These are gifts to the church. Now, they understand, not necessarily so much that that person is gifted, that it's because this is the gift to the church. The gift to the church is a missionary. The gift to the church is a prophet. The gift to the church is an evangelist. The gift to the church is a shepherd. The gift to the church is a teacher. All of those that are there. And so these are gifts that are literally given to the church. So the person doesn't so much possess this, but the church possesses this. They look in the church and said, we've got in our church, we've got all of this group of people. We've got this kind of people in our church. And that's what we look at in terms of those. Now, I will say this. The gifts mentioned in Romans are abiding gifts. They stick with you. You see, they are given to you at salvation. Or he said that. You need a live spirit. But they are yours to be called upon to do the work of the Spirit. The gift or gifts you have in Romans will never leave you. I want to say that over and over again. They have stuck to you. They are your gifts. They are the ones that you're going to walk with and do the work of the church. The ones in 1 Corinthians may come upon you. And you may have it one time, four times, 44 times. I have no number of the times or which them are the ones that you might receive at that moment for that purpose. That can happen. But you are, you are to work really in the gifts that you find in Romans. Now, that doesn't mean you're excluded from doing any of the other things that are not in your gifts. For example, you may not have the gift of mercy, but that doesn't mean you don't need to be merciful. You may not have the gift of giving. That doesn't mean you don't need to give. You may not have the gift of teaching, but sometimes you might teach. And fact is, here's the incredible thing. I've found that sometimes the person with that gift of encouragement is actually a really good teacher. Now, they don't have the depth of study that a teacher puts into it, but what they do is they encourage and urge people on in the way that they teach. So you can actually operate in something that is not your gift, but you're operating in your gift when you do so. So you do work within those gifts that are there. So I can say this, no one has all of the gifts. They are distributed by God, but not willy-nilly. He doesn't really say, there. He does it by his grace. See, a measure of grace is in attaching the right gift to the right person. That's what it says, according to the grace that has been given to you. And see, and I want to say this to you, especially you younger folks. This is not like sitting in a room and they put a hat on your head and they say, Gryffindorf. You know, or Ravenclaw, or any of that kind of stuff. That's not what I'm talking about here. It's by the grace that God has given you. And what I'm saying, see, God's grace, He knew you before the beginning of time. In God's grace, He knew what it would take to bring you to salvation. And at God's grace, He knew the right gift to give you at the time of salvation. So it is this sort of thing that happens. You see, it is your special gift that God has given you. There may be other people with that gift, but that's not the point. It works within the grace that God has given you. But the gift God has given you is worthless unless used for God's purpose. You see, if you are not using your spiritual gift, you're not walking with God. Because you walk with God in your spiritual gift, doing what God has called you to do, and you find yourself growing. And when you don't use your spiritual gift, you are not walking with God. Now, let me give you a little illustration here. I didn't give the first service this, but I got to give you this illustration. Let's say, for example, you spill the milk. And I don't mean anything crazy by that. I mean, you spill your milk and knock it off the table. Okay. The prophet comes in and tells you what you did wrong. That's what a prophet would do. The servant will clean it up for you. The teacher gives you instructions so that you can keep the milk glass upright from now on. The encourager tells you, you got this. This isn't going to happen again. You're going to be great at drinking milk from now on. The giver gives you another glass of milk. The leader organizes a team of people who can handle this milk spilling epidemic that we've got. And the one who has mercy puts his arm around you and gives you the comfort. That's the way our spiritual gifts work. The weakness of a church is found in a large number of people not using their spiritual gifts. See, I look at it this way, folks. I think a lot of times people say, well, you give us this evaluation, and you can do those kinds of things. And a lot of times they're just revealed to you what you already know. What I would say to you is, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And what do you believe that God has gifted you to do in this? See, here's the thing. To me, it's like baking a pie. I baked 15 pies this past week. Gave them to my neighbors, just letting you know what I did. Went around my neighborhood and gave them to my neighbors. You have to have the right ingredients to make the pie come out right. And here's the deal. A church has the right ingredients. Every time somebody joins the church, you know what the question is? I don't say it out loud, but it's in my head. Wonder what God is doing. I wonder how God will use this person. I wonder what God is going to do to forward what his church is supposed to do in this. And so what you do is that you have the right ingredients. And so you say, you know what? What do I want to do? What does God want me to do? Now, I think a lot of people think, well, God's going to make me do something I just don't ever want to do. That is baloney, folks. God uses you and your gifts to give you the joy that you cannot imagine if you didn't do what he wanted. Think of it this way. You go for a job interview, a regular job interview. And what happens is that the potential employer starts asking you about your qualifications and what you'd like to do. And as you begin to give those qualifications and what you really want to do, the employer is over here on the other side, and he or she is checking off the list and going click, 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 click. You match up exactly with what they want. Do you know what the question is that employer says to you then? When can you start? That is the answer. And here's the deal, folks. Once you find the gift you're supposed to, once you find your gift, and once you find the job that you want to have, the one that you enjoy having, you will never work another day of your life. Everything after that is a joy. You get to do it. You're not forced to do it anymore. But I have to say this, you must act. You must act. There's something that you've got to do. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how I know this. You may figure this out on your own. But if you buy those pills that they sell on TV that say that you can lose 25 pounds by Christmas, they come with instructions that you need to eat in a healthy way and do this much exercise. And if you do those things right there, guess what? You can lose 25 pounds for Christmas. I don't think that you need the pills at all. What I'm trying to say is that it isn't about us taking a pill and hoping something happens. It is about us doing something. It's about acting. Brett's heard me say this before, but it is true. Standing on the promises are never achieved by sitting on the premises. You know, you can sing that standing on the promises, but you can't be sitting on the premises. You really have to be out doing what God has called you to do. And when that happens, folks, you'll find more joy. And you know, say this, folks, if you're not acting and if you're not letting the Spirit work in you, I will tell you, everything at church is boring. It always will be, because you see, we're trying to walk with God, and that looks very boring from the outside. You got to get on the inside to do this. So I would say to you, tell us what you want to do. I'll bet God has a plan for you. Let's pray.